This program is intended for individuals who are blind or are unable to read physical print and is brought to you by CABVI's Audio Information Services team.
Hello, I'm David Hatfield, and this is Classical Music Connection. Let's find out what's on today's program. In the BBC Music Magazine for February of 2024, Claire Jackson discovers that sibling connections can lead to meaningful musical partnerships, as long as childhood rivalries don't get in the way. The audience begins to clap, gradually gathering speed in time with the pianists on stage. Wheeled on by the percussive accelerando, the duo zips through Zorba's Dance, a piece by Greek composer Mikis Theodorakis that evokes ouzo-soaked taverns and hot summer nights. The dark-haired pianists, virtually identical in sunglasses and denim shorts, finish their own arrangement of Greece's popular musical export with a flourish. As the sun makes a lengthy retreat behind the tree-lined stage, musicians invite young audience members to try out some instruments. A child delights at blowing a clarinet mouthpiece. Another tentatively presses piano keys. These guests have come from one of the refugee camps that remain on Lesbos, the Turkey-adjacent island that unwittingly became the center of the 2015 migrant crisis. A short while later, the stage lights and mosquito repellent are out in full force. The pianists, Greek-German sisters Dane and Kiveli Durkin, are back. Alternating between Greek and English, the Durkins welcome visitors to the Malevos International Music Festival, or MIMF, the event they established, along with their Lesbos-born mother, Lito Daku, in 2014. The Berlin-based duo are prodigal daughters of Malevos, the picturesque village that they fill with chamber music every August. Having played piano duets since Kiveli joined Big Sister Danae at the keyboard, the Theodorakis piece features on their latest album, Apollo and Dionysius, alongside works by Glass, Mendelssohn, Brahms, and others. Co-creating a festival seemed like a natural step. "Working together feels like our superpower," says Kiveli. "We can accomplish so much more." Facing hurdles that have included the European financial crisis, huge numbers of displaced people, a pandemic, and sprawling forest fires, two artistic heads proved better than one. The sisters have reflected contemporary challenges in their programming, from 2016's Crossroads theme to 2023's Symbiosis, and are preparing to curate a special 10th edition for 2024. "It's been challenging, but together we can keep going," says Danae. "No one knows us better than we do each other," adds Kiveli. While working with a sibling might be an anathema to many, those birth order tropes can be hard to avoid, there are plenty who have made a success out of it. Polish emigres the Wonsels went on to establish a leading film studio under the anglicized version of their name, Warner Brothers. And the Kardashians have earned millions from a reality TV series that follows the relationships between the eponymous sisters. Even in underground activities, it can pay to keep it in the family. The Cray twins are among the UK's most notorious historic criminals. So, it is unsurprising that when it comes to music, the pattern is repeated. It's common in rock and pop, from AC/DC to the White Stripes, and, perhaps unsurprisingly, chamber music, an art form reliant on intimacy. In Two Violins, One Viola, A Cello, and Me, Sonia Simenauer's recent memoir about managing string quartets, violist Krzysztof Trzelski describes his time with the Belcher Quartet as a great stroke of luck. This was, he writes, because through music, I found the siblings I missed as a child. Elder sisters have a distinctive influence over their younger family members during childhood. Shortly after I started playing the flute, my sister took up the clarinet, following me to various wind ensembles, and only years later admitting she hadn't enjoyed it all that much. Perhaps left to her own devices, she might have found her way to another, more suitable pastime. I felt a desire to emulate Danai for many years, says Cavalli. I wanted to learn the piano so that I could share that space with her. She never discouraged me. Happily, like Danai, Cavalli demonstrated prodigious talent, although she says she always found practicing to be a struggle. Danai was much more disciplined. The times when I enjoyed practicing were when we played together. Sometimes it was music for four hands, but often the sisters would just sit together at the stool. Having Danai next to me makes it easier to work, says Cavalli. The Durkins follow in the footsteps of Katia and Marielle Lebec, the French piano duo with a vast repertoire and discography, which includes 2014 album Sisters. Like the Lebecs, the Durkins live together with their partners and extended family. Wolfgang Mozart similarly admired older sister Maria Anna, known as Nannerl, who seems to have been the impetus behind his early musical forays. The two children performed together as part of tours organized by their father, and Wolfgang wrote several pieces for Nannerl to play, including the Prelude and Fugue in C, that's Kirchhoff 394, and the Four Preludes, Kirchhoff 284A. The siblings drew apart in later years, perhaps due to Nannerl's enforced retirement from the stage in exchange for marriage, and the separation seems to have been exacerbated by Wolfgang's marriage to Constanze. But until 1785, Wolfgang sent Nannerl copies of his piano concertos, suggesting the musical bond wasn't so easily broken. If one sibling relationship has the potential for complication when combined with work pressures, what happens when multiple brothers and sisters are involved? The Hagen Quartet, founded by siblings Lucas, Angelica, Veronica, and Clemens Hagen, ticked along for several years after it was formed in the 1980s. The siblings conveniently played the right assortment of instruments for a string quartet. Of course, this didn't happen by chance. Their father was first violinist in the Salzburg Motetteum and encouraged them to play together at home. The Hagen Quartet's biography artfully notes that in 1987, Angelica Hagen left the quartet to be replaced by Rainer Schmidt. As the copy also observes, these changes in lineup affect most ensembles. These internal modifications from which few quartets are spared. Sure, but the stakes are higher when you are related to your colleagues. The ongoing Barkley Brothers fallout being a case in point in the business world. Sibling relationships can often seem strange to those who may not have direct or comparable experience of them. The closeness between the two sisters is gently mocked in Mozart's operatic farce, Così fa tutte, which sees Fiordiligi and Tortabella get into hot water trying half-heartedly to stay faithful to their fiancés. Dynamics become further muddied when a brother or sister takes on a parental role, as was the case with Johann Christoph Bach, who raised his younger sibling Johann Sebastian when the latter was orphaned at 10 years old. The elder Bach was the organist at St. Michael's Church in Ohrdruf, and Johann Sebastian was given organ lessons, as well as learning the basics of organ construction when the instrument was overhauled. It seems this period was important in J.S. Bach's development. His Capriccio in E major is dedicated to Johann Christoph. Probably the most famous brother-sister twosome are the Mendelssohns. Felix adored his big sister Fanny, and the two developed their prodigious musicality in proximity. In adulthood, as Fanny's creative life was hampered by the societal expectations of the time, the siblings' lives remained intertwined. Felix composed large-scale orchestral works. Fanny, with Felix's encouragement, wrote keyboard pieces and chamber music and held regular salons. Fanny died suddenly, aged 41, and Felix passed away shortly after, supposedly of heartbreak. The intensity of their relationship, witnessed in correspondence, has even caused some academics to speculate there was romance between brother and sister. In Rethinking Mendelssohn, a collection of essays edited by Benedict Taylor, Angela Mace Christian introduces the concept of sib-eroticism, inspired by a letter in which Fanny tells Felix that he exerts a demonic influence over her. At the other end of the scale, the spectacle of large families performing together has long delighted audiences. It draws inevitable comparisons with the Von Trapp family, a real-life Austrian singing group who inspired the Sound of Music. When the Kanne Mason siblings, seven brothers and sisters, all of whom play either violin, piano, or cello, appeared on Britain's Got Talent in 2015, Simon Cowell's pronouncement was, "The fact you're a family makes this really special." The key to success is maintaining separate careers as well as playing together. Kanne Mason projects range from an exquisite whole family recording of Saint-Saëns' Carnival of the Animals via the Kanne Mason Trio, pianist Izzata, violinist Breimer, and cellist Sheku, to solo performances. No one has better experience of this balancing act than the Bevan family, multiple generations who seem to have isolated the gene for excellent singing voices. The Bevan Family Choir, active in the 1970s, was reformed in 2013 by some of the younger Bevans, including sopranos Sophie and Mary, who were awarded MBEs in the Queen's Birthday Honors List in 2019. The Bevan Family Consort, or BFC, released its debut recording on Signum last year, including a Magnificat by Dominic Bevan. Their Facebook page profiles each member with characteristic wit. Hugh, for example, is described as the firstborn son of Rachel Bevan and John Carter. He selfishly used up most of the good-looking genes in the family, so none of the rest of us got a look in. We all hate him, but we don't have enough bases in the family, so we need him for the BFC. The suggestion is, that ultimately what musical siblings really need to thrive is a good sense of humor. In the November 17, 2023 edition of the Washington Post, Michael Allen Broder introduces us to a very innovative technology at the Lyric Opera of Chicago. Opera is everything all at once. Music and drama, poetry and dance, grandeur and intimacy, spectacle and sound. This all-encompassing aspect makes it one of the most accessible art forms, yet one of the most challenging to make accessible. For our audience members who are deaf or hard of hearing, or who are blind or have low vision, attending an opera can be a deeply frustrating experience. A pilot program at the Lyric Opera of Chicago is trying on a new approach for deaf and hard of hearing people to experience opera. The sound shirt, a jacket-like garment equipped with 16 haptic actuators that transmit sound from the orchestra and stage into pulses, vibrations, and other forms of haptic feedback in the shirt itself. Brett Dunn, who spearheaded the sound shirt initiative at the Lyric, is the company's senior director of digital initiatives and one of its most tireless advocates for expanding accessibility. In addition to accommodations for mobility disabilities such as ramps and wheelchair seating, like many opera houses, the Lyric offers performances with American Sign Language interpretation, projected subtitles, and assisted listening devices for deaf and hard of hearing patrons. For blind people and those with low vision, the Lyric provides Braille and large print programs, audio-described performances, high-powered glasses, and pre-performance touch tours, allowing audience members to feel various props, costumes, and surfaces before the curtain rises. The sound shirt, though, is cut from a different cloth than most accessibility technology, providing a mediated experience of the music that registers as physical and personal. It doesn't recreate the experience of listening to music, Dunn says. It's its own thing. It translates the music into a different sensory experience that can be felt by people. And what I've seen through all of the early testing that we did is that audiences who are deaf or hard of hearing have responded very viscerally to it. That, to me, is what opera is all about, says Lyric General Director Anthony Freud. It's the punch to the solar plexus. One can have endless intellectual conversations about the content of operas, about interpreting operas. There's a huge entertainment value, but ultimately, the point to me is the emotional punch. This was an opportunity to have a physical relationship with the music being performed. And that gets to the very heart of opera. For attendees at a Lyric production of West Side Story earlier this year, input from the sound shirt didn't just help provide additional detail to the performance. It also illuminated the musical spaces in between, the interludes and interstitial passages of music, the overtures overloaded with crucial cues. Dunn recalls one tester's eyes welling up with tears after the performance. It was a confirmation that we were onto something, that it was working, he says, that this could actually be meaningful to these folks. Lyric's sound shirt project was launched in partnership with the City of Chicago's Mayor's Office for People with Disabilities. But the garment itself was designed by Cute Circuit, a London-based wearable technology design firm that Dunn became aware of in 2020, before he came to the Lyric. Dunn immediately saw potential for the Sound Shirt to not just enhance the company's accessibility offerings, but also harness the emotional impact of music minus the music itself. It's not for nothing that Cute Circuit's other primary product is a hug shirt, which employs sensors and actuators to transmit virtual hugs between distant friends. On the Cute Circuit website, a Sound Shirt retails for about $1,900, making the Lyric's free program accessible in more ways than one. At the Lyric, an array of microphones positioned over various sections of the orchestra feeds audio information to a central computer. Dunn and his crew adapt the software to respond to the specific instrumentation of a given piece. West Side Story has different rhythmic demands than, say, the Lyric's current production of Janáček's Janúfa. Those audio signals are divided across 7 channels, each mapped to one of 16 different zones on the Sound Shirt, where motifs and melodies register as patterns and pulses across the garment's 16 actuators. Thus, for a production of The Flying Dutchman, the violins and cellos are assigned to trigger haptic feedback along the right and left shoulders and upper arms. Timpani and bass, meanwhile, are sent down the lower torso and hips. Wagner's mighty horns are split across the upper arms like goosebumps, while vocals register at the wrists like a pulse. The music becomes something you can feel. Through a back and forth with testers, Dunn and his team have been experimenting with settings, tweaking parameters, and trying to meaningfully map music to the body. The Lyric has 10 Sound Shirts, with plans to ramp up to 15. Rachel Arfa is a longtime disability advocate and civil rights attorney who serves as commissioner of MOPD. As a deaf person who wears bilateral cochlear implants, the issue of accessibility has been close to her heart for a long time. Her mother tells the story of how she was the only child not moved to tears by the music in E.T. when they saw it in the theater. But while expanding accessibility is her life's work, Arfa also knows that good intentions can often pave the road to nowhere. When Lyric approached me with this shirt, I was highly skeptical, Arfa said via email. There are often technical solutions designed by people without disabilities for people with disabilities that do not solve the barriers that we have. Intrigued enough, Arfa agreed to test the Sound Shirt at a recent Lyric production of West Side Story. Arfa was surprised to find the shirt actually felt like a good fit for the problem it is trying to solve. At live theater, it is difficult for me to discriminate between different sounds, so I rely on the access provided for equal access, she says. I began to understand that the haptics on the Sound Shirt vibrated in conjunction with the orchestra sounds. One example is when string instruments were played. The haptics followed the pitch and rhythm. A second example is when a singer was singing a long melody. The haptics picked up on this, and I could experience this through the vibration. I am not able to hear this sound, but I could feel it. It was such a surprise and a thrill. Tina Childress, an audiologist who lives in Champaign, Illinois, is a late deafened adult who wears cochlear implants and works as an advocate for accessibility in the arts. She has taken part in the Kennedy Center's Leadership Exchange in Arts and Disability Conference and served on the steering committee for the Cultural Access Collaborative in Illinois. In 2016, Childress sued the Fabulous Fox Theater in St. Louis for refusing to provide captions to deaf and hard-of-hearing attendees, claiming that it was in violation of the Americans with Disabilities Act. The court agreed and ordered the theater to offer captioning whenever requested, as opposed to single performances, and to provide notice that captions were available. To Childress, who also tested the sound shirt at West Side Story, what's most important is offering a variety of options, an everything-all-at-once approach to accessibility. It's important to remember that you can use two or three of these choices at the same time, she said via email. With the sound shirt, having that tactile feedback for what I don't hear was, pardon the pun, instrumental in me enjoying the performance. Childress appreciated the haptic feedback at the wrists to indicate dialogue, and the way the shirt clarified the various elements of the score. After intermission, she lent the shirt to another audience member to try out. I didn't realize how much I was using it until I didn't have it. Both women appreciated the sound shirt's athletic adjacent look and lightweight build. I have seen images of other haptic vests, Childress says, and the first thought that came to mind is it looked like a SWAT vest. The advantage of the zip-up is that you can make the haptic feedback more intense by zipping up. And if it becomes too much, you just unzip to lessen the effects. But most important to everyone involved, from the developers to the testers to the performers, is the potential for the sound shirt to connect people more closely with the opera and to open the doors of the opera house to new audiences. I confess I might have even fallen asleep because I struggled to connect with the show previously, Arfa says. The sound shirt is a true enhancement to access services, and I am making plans to return for future performances, something I would not have done previously. You've been listening to Classical Music Connection, brought to you each week by the Radio Reading Services of Greater Cincinnati, a service of the Cincinnati Association for the Blind and Visually Impaired. I'm your host, David Hatfield, inviting you to join me again next week for Classical Music Connection.